From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. How important are trees to a city's landscape? When you see the glorious oak trees in Carolina Heights in Wilmington, do you wonder how long it took them to grow? Do you worry about the safety of those old trees and heavy limbs falling on roadways? Do you think tree preservation gets in the way of development and economic growth in what is an urban area? As Wilmington enjoys a development boom with hundreds of new apartment units, single-family homes, and commercial properties going up, what's happening to the area's trees? Some local activists in Wilmington and Southport are working to help municipalities do more to protect trees by advocating for rules that are clearer, more consistent, and more enforceable. City officials admit that Wilmington's current development ordinance is a bit long in the tooth, last updated in the 1980s, and there is work underway to bring it up to date. We'll also learn today about the particular challenges builders and developers face when building within city limits. But to start, we're going to hear from two people who are very focused on the urgency of protecting trees in Wilmington and Southport. Bill Jane served on the Wilmington Tree Commission, a 12-member body, nine of those appointed by members of City Council, for 6 years. He chaired the commission for two. He is now a member of a relatively new local nonprofit, Alliance for Cape Fear Trees. Bill Jane, welcome to Coastline.
Well, thank you, Rachel. It's a pleasure to be here.
Scott Len chairs the Southport Forestry Committee. Scott Len, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel. Pleasure to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Bill Jane, there is a city-based tree commission in Wilmington. You served on it. You chaired it. Why did local people feel the need to start their own separate nonprofit, Alliance for Cape Fear Trees?
Well, Rachel, I think the main reasons for forming the Alliance were to broaden the scope of the focus of the effort to the entire Cape Fear area, not just the city of Wilmington, and also to develop an independent agency that an independent group that was able to raise funds to communicate on its own through social media and so forth, and just to kind of increase the potency, if you will, of the effort. And It owes an awful lot to the Wilmington Tree Commission. People who were on the commission were the ones who really got it started and are kind of running it on a month-to-month basis. But we have brought in some people that weren't on the Tree Commission, and we're starting to have a little bit wider focus.
Scotland, Southport is known for its spectacular live oaks, and until we started researching this discussion, I thought Southport had a fairly robust tree ordinance, but this is something that you've been working on for a while. What are the concerns in Southport?
Well, there is actually, within the UDO for the city of Southport, there is a tree preservation a chapter involved in that. What I think you would find, though, is that amongst the citizens of Southport, very few people of them are aware that that exists. And the problem with application of the sort of, if you will, the rules or regulations has been kind of uneven and spotty. The differences between Southport and Wilmington is big community, big municipality versus small town. And if you look at a big municipality, Charlotte, Wilmington, Raleigh, they have members on their public works staff that can focus on trees. They might have an urban forester or a arborist or several arborists under on their payroll. The town of Southport has none of those things.
And so, what kind of focus on trees do you need? Because those of us who are lay people look at the trees and say, wow, that's a gorgeous old tree. Don't cut it down. What's complicated about that?
Well, that's the general perception, is that we need to wrap our arms around every tree in town and say we need to save it And that's true to the extent possible you want to do that. But a tree ordinance should not be regulatory in the sense that it keeps somebody, for example, from building a house on a lot that they've owned or it's been in their family for a while. What we're really concerned about and where we're going as we update this chapter to the UDO is to make it easy for everybody to understand, both the people that work in the town and the people that live in the town, make it easily applicable for everybody to adhere to, and then easily enforceable as well. And one of the things that we've gone through, and Bill alluded to this, is that it gets very complicated very quickly. And in fact, we started down a road. I spent dozens and dozens of hours, if not hundreds of hours, working on this thing. And about halfway through it, we realized it was getting so complex that we tossed it out the window and we started over to make a simpler document that everybody can adhere to. And that's even more important for us in a small community like that where we don't have the resources that...
Have there been things that have happened in Southport recently that have sort of raised alarm bells for you? Or is this strictly coming from a need to plan?
It's a combination of the two. There have been some instances, both with public trees and private trees, where things happened and people were up in arms about it because, A, they didn't know what was going on, why it was going on. They go by one day and a lot's cleared because somebody's going to build a house. And, of course, everybody's just up in arms about it. There has been some bigger development where we haven't perhaps the spirit of the current rules were not adhered to by the developer. And then, of course, that gets everybody worked up as well. So we're trying to ameliorate that, you know, through public education, getting the word out why we're doing things, especially if we're doing it to public trees and that. And I think it's working for us. Over the last 6 months or so, we've seen a big change.
Bill Dane with Alliance for Cape Fear Trees. Wilmington, as most of us know, is already highly developed. There aren't that many areas of, I don't even know if we would call it forest, left. But what are the areas that you're concerned about?
Well, I think there are some areas that are being developed. And, you know, for example, the development down at Independence and South 17th Street, that was basically a Carolina Bay. That was a sort of unique ecological niche for this part of the world. And, you know, it wasn't a great forest in terms of, you know, when you think of like the Great Smoky Mountains or something like that. But there were a lot of trees in there, mostly pines, not even too many longleaf pines. But there were some, there are many areas like that. If you look along Carolina Beach Road, for example, up further on Market Street. So that's a big concern right now. And in the historic districts, one of the unusual aspects of Wilmington's urban forest is that a lot of the oak trees, you mentioned Carolina Heights, but a lot of the oak trees along Market Street and in the historic district along 3rd and 4th and 5th are laurel oaks. And they're very, very different than the live oaks. They grow faster. They're beautiful trees. If you look at, for example, in the National Cemetery at, 19th and Market, that big tree on the top of the hill there, the little hill in the cemetery, is a laurel oak. It's a beautiful tree. It's very healthy. It's probably 150 years old. But when you have trees alongside the road that get hit by cars, that becomes kind of a vector, an opening for infection, and the laurel oaks are very, very susceptible to heart rot. They get hollowed out and can easily fall. And
that's happened before.
Yeah.
And tree limbs have also, big, heavy tree limbs have dropped off some of those trees.
Yeah. Well, that's another issue, too. I mean, you know, if you're going to have these beautiful street trees, you have to be able to take care of them. You have to be able to prune them. You know, if you've got a few years of drought, summer limb drop, they call it, is a common phenomenon, trees are going to lose some limbs. But the laurel oaks, this is a big issue, you know, that people are concerned that a lot of them are coming down. They're unsafe. They need to come down. And then,
so you concur with that assessment that those need to come down. They're unsafe at this point.
Yeah, a lot of them. Not all of them.
And I think that's what, if I can interject, I think that that's part of the role that the Tree Commission, the Forestry Committee plays, is that there are trees, and Southport's the exact same. Probably half of the trees that people think are live oaks are in fact water oaks or laurel oaks, whose lifespan is much different than a live oak. You know, 75, 100 years is probably the lifespan of a tree. And a tree is like a human being, right? It has a lifespan, and it gets sick, and it dies eventually.
A lot of people don't think of it that way.
Right. And so at some point, you have to look at a tree and say, this tree is compromised by rot, it's or whatever the affliction is. This is a time that we should just go ahead and take that tree out, as big and as magnificent as it is, and replant so that our grandchildren, you know, at the risk of sounding a little trite, you know, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren can come stand under a 75-year-old oak tree in the future.
We have a lot of questions coming in, and we're going to go to break in just a couple minutes. But before we do, Bill, Jane, you referred to some of the special elements of the ecosystem here, the ecosystem contained in that area of small forest that was recently taken out. What are you talking about aside from pine trees? Are there animals and other kinds of plants in there that we lose?
Well, you know, I don't know specifically what kinds of plants were in that site, but when you talk about the carnivorous plants like Venus flytraps and stuff like that, that's the kind of habitat that they live in.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about trees and their preservation amidst a development boom. We have two local activists with us working to help Wilmington and Southport update tree ordinances. We'd love to hear how you think about the local tree population within the urban landscape. Joining us in the next segment will be a staff member from the City of Wilmington to answer questions about what's currently on the books and how that's regulated. The phone lines are now open. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's an exploration of tree preservation. As new residential and commercial developments bloom like a spring garden, a new local nonprofit has emerged called the Alliance for Cape Fear Trees. One of its members, Bill Jane, is with us today. Also here is Scott Len, chair of the Southport Forestry Committee. And joining us now is Brian Chambers, a planner for the City of Wilmington. Brian Chambers, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel.
And if you have a question about trees in Wilmington or Southport, you can give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Brian Chambers, we received an email from Sierra, a student at UNCW. And she has a great opening question for you. She asks, what standard do you use to quantify preserving trees in urban areas? Which, of course, Wilmington is one.
Well, our tree ordinance identifies protected trees based on species, the diameter of that tree, and those protected trees are then required to be preserved to the extent practical on a site. There's also a standard for what we consider a significant tree. And those trees are required to be maintained on that site. And if they do indeed have to come down, they would have to be mitigated with replacement trees or a payment in lieu to plant trees on other properties.
When you're talking about a significant tree, I don't want to get too much into the weeds about inches or diameter, and, you know, but is there sort of a general, if a tree is more than 100 years old or if a tree, a certain species of tree, what makes a tree a significant tree?
It's based on species. It's based on the diameter of the tree. So a 24-inch oak would be considered significant. A 32-inch pine tree would be considered significant.
Any kind of pine tree?
It would be a longleaf pine.
A longleaf pine specifically?
Yes.
Vince asks, are there automatic protections for trees that are estimated to be 200, 300 years or older?
Automatic, no.
So nothing is automatic, as I guess we saw Bill Jayne, there was a tree that came down on Market Street near, I think it, the establishment was called the Sonic. And that was controversial. Why was that so controversial? Why were people trying to protect that?
Well, that was a City of Wilmington heritage tree. It is. We do have a program under the Tree Commission of identifying heritage trees. We've got over 60 of them identified so far in the city. That was one. It was a landmark. It was a beautiful specimen. It was more than 50 feet tall and 65 feet wide. It had a kind of a double trunk, but at the what they say, they measure it according to the diameter, breast height. It was about 20 feet around. It was so. It was that's a circumference, not the diameter. But it was a huge tree, and it was very healthy. It had been threatened once before in a widening of Market Street in the 1980s, and was protected. So this time, what happened was that DOT, as part of their Carr Avenue project, where they're kind of routing some of the left turns in a different way, wants to, they're going to, I guess, widen Cinema Drive a little bit more. It's going to come out, and that's where the tree was. And they felt that the tree needed to come down. And the process that DOT went through to perform their environmental due diligence and to let the community know what was going on really didn't highlight the fact that that tree was going to be threatened by the project. So as more was found out about the project, it was already sort of late to try to get DOT to change their plans. And the City of Wilmington, City Council, worked with DOT to try to get them to change their plans, but ultimately it was a failure. That tree was a tree that, you know, it was one of the great things about it. It was a landmark. It was visible on Market Street for nearly a mile. People, you know, you can come off of College Road, and there's a nice little sign there that says Historic River Area or something like that. And you get off and you're in a very kind of commercial part of Market Street. And it's not until you start to see some trees that people say, oh, yeah, this is what they're talking about. This is the historic Wilmington that people talk about.
Brian Chambers with the City of Wilmington. Was this something – so Wilmington was also working to try to protect this tree?
Yes, it's my understanding. I didn't work directly on this, but it was my understanding a lot of effort went into trying to preserve it, and unfortunately that effort was unsuccessful.
If there was a different kind of tree ordinance, and I know this is something that's in the works, but if there was something that was clearer, more concise, had more teeth, would that situation have unfolded differently?
I don't think so. I think this was more of a transportation improvement project, so it came down to how was that project going to work with the tree in place. It really comes down to that improvement and where the tree was located in that instance.
Well, Rachel, let me Bill Jayne jump in just for a second. The one of the issues that DOT brought up with that particular project, that tree, that issue was that you know, they didn't know what trees were most important to the City of Wilmington.
The DOT did not know.
Right. That was, you know, in effect, that's what they were saying. And so, you know, our list of heritage trees, the identified trees, were not well known. For example, now if you go on the city's website and the Wilmington Tree Commission website, there's an interactive map that shows where in these trees are and gives you a little picture. So that is an improvement. And many tree codes have, many unified development codes have stronger protection for such trees, heritage trees, landmark trees, that sort of thing.
Okay, we need to get to some of these questions that are piling up. Tom of the Transplanted Garden says, I find the recent onslaught of building disturbing, to say the least. Enormous tracts of land around Wilmington have been bulldozed for apartment building complexes, the size of which I've never seen before, leaving token, at best, areas of natural vegetation. We are very rapidly putting the native population of vegetation at risk. One of those most at risk is the Venus flytrap. They are native only to the Wilmington area within a radius of about 90 miles. Are there any surveys done to check for populations of these plants before these areas are stripped? If so, why not? Brian Chambers.
Yes. Indeed, that is part of the code requirement, is to provide the planner that's reviewing that project needs to know whether there's any habitat for endangered species on that site. So it is a code requirement at this time.
Noel writes, would you speak to any experience or ordinances you have that addresses tree removal on existing golf courses? She's asking about pine trees versus heritage trees versus storm-damaged trees. Brian Chambers.
It comes down to our current ordinance. If it's a private property, they would have to comply just like any other property, regardless of what use is intended for the site.
And Kevin is asking about problems with Bradford pear trees and its effect on other trees. This Scott Len of the Southport Forestry Committee.
Well, I'll go in on Bradford or Callery pears. A lot of times that you see them in development. So the subdivision will go in, and you've told that developer, you need to replant X amount of trees so that we replace X amount of canopy in a particular thing. And, of course, their go-to plant is always the Bradford pear. Bradford pears are very popular because they grow very quickly. They're beautiful trees when they're in bloom right now. They're starting to come out, and they're gorgeous trees. The problem with the Bradford pear, especially when you're talking about coastal North Carolina, is they're not very sturdy. So a good storm comes through, and the next thing you know, half the Bradford pears that you have are laying on their side or have shattered in the thing. So they're quite popular with developers and, you know, homeowners to get that quick pop of tree or color. But for the long term, they're really not a good plant for this area.
Well, in light of that, Scott Len, can you speak to what's called the Carolina canopy and talk about the kinds of trees that activists are focused on protecting here?
I think that what we seek to do, and certainly what we're trying to do in Southport, is to encourage people, if they're going to remove trees, and we're asking them to mitigate that removal with the replanting of trees, we would like for them, to the extent possible, to use either native plants or native R's, variations of that native plant. We've actually come up with a listing of probably about 25 different trees that we'd like to see them utilize because they're native to the area or native to North Carolina or native to the United States. The beauty of using those is it keeps in harmony with the current urban forest that you have, but also we're pretty well assured that these plants are going to be okay here, that they're going to thrive here. We can expand it a little bit. You know, everybody loves red buds or dogwoods and things like that, and people want that color. That's fantastic. Those are trees that are native to this area as well. But Bradford pears, or perhaps a tree, some ornamental Chinese tree that's not native to this area, we'd really like to discourage people from planting those.
Brian Chambers, as you proceed along on the rework of the ordinance, are considerations like that being taken under advisement, the kinds of trees that are going to be mitigator trees, replacement trees?
Absolutely. I think we strongly encourage native species first and then species that would be successful in this environment.
There was a story, this might have been a couple years ago now, when a developer cut down some trees. I think it was... not sure if it was within the city of Wilmington limits, but it was near Wrightsville Beach, and it was a surprise to neighbors. And I think there was sort of an uproar around it because these were very old trees and I guess cherished by some local folks. What happens to a developer if they violate the ordinance and do something like that?
Well, they're issued a civil citation and fined based on the size of that tree.
We have an email from Ariadne. She writes, who is giving the, and I'm going to mispronounce this commercial company name, Osplund?
Osplund Tree, the tree services.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who is giving that company permission to go through our city and destroy healthy, mature trees everywhere? Why are the clearance right-of-ways so much larger now? How can they come onto our private properties and cut trees without our permission and without prior notice?
That's Duke Power. And, yeah, they're a contractor for Duke Power. And they've got pretty much carte blanche to go where they want and cut down those trees that they prune that may be on private property. There is an easement there because of the power lines. The Tree Commission of Wilmington has tried to work with Duke Power. About the only thing that we've been able to accomplish is that, again, on the Wilmington Tree Commission website, there is a an item that will tell you what their schedule is, where they're going to be trimming next. And Scott, you might want to...
Yeah, I just want to... Rachel, if you look at any tree ordinance, and I've looked at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, there are two passes, if you will, that are given. One is for the utility companies to be able to go in and prune trees that are interfering with power lines, cable lines, stuff like that. Now, could they do a better job? Absolutely. But they have a contract to keep those power lines clear. And the people that are outraged by how those trees are cut, myself included, are probably more outraged if they lose power when a branch takes that power line out and they're without air conditioning for 4 days. So could they do a better job? Absolutely. But they get a free pass on being able to keep that easement clear and those power lines clear. And the other one, quite frankly, is public safety. A lot of times limbs, for example, on trees overhanging streets, it may be a beautiful limb, but you have to have that 14 feet of clearance so that the fire truck can get through. And we just went through that in Southport, and we got a company to come in and prune. They did a fantastic job for us, but it was through that interaction instead of just coming and hacking them all out. We found a way to split the difference and do it aesthetically in an aesthetically pleasing way, but also meeting those NCDOT requirements that allowed for that clearance to go up. But utilities and public safety.
I think the city and DOT, Wilmington and DOT generally do a better job, I think, of pruning in an aesthetically pleasing manner when they have to. But Duke Power, there's room for improvement, and I would encourage people, at least in the city of Wilmington, to go on that Tree Commission website and see where Duke Power is going to be pruning and contact them and do everything they can to make sure that they follow their own rules carefully.
And Bill Jane, tell us again how people can check out the Duke Power schedule, the Duke Energy schedule for tree pruning.
Well, the easiest way is to just go on the City of Wilmington website, wilmingtonnc.gov, and search for Wilmington Tree Commission, and it'll come up. And it's under trees and parks and recreation. It's difficult to find unless you do that, but that's a good shortcut.
And we can put a link on our website to that also. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about tree preservation in an urban environment, particularly against the backdrop of a development boom in southeastern North Carolina. Our guest today, Bill Jane, member of the new nonprofit Alliance for Cape Fear Trees, Scott Len, chair of the Southport Forestry Committee, and Brian Chambers, planner for the City of Wilmington. They're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Alina from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Rachel. So this is sort of a bigger problem. I think we have a societal problem when we give leeway for anything to make a profit. A lot of these big developments that were mentioned by the owner of the transplanted garden are because it's cheaper to go down and make this one big, flat, huge thing and then do whatever you want in there than to have to work around trees. And if profit is maximizing profit, you know, we're losing wildlife. Not just the plants, but all the animals that were in there. And it just seems like we have a societal issue of not recognizing the importance of that to our spiritual well-being, other than being in, I mean, some of these new developments here are absolutely horrifying. There's not like, you know, green plants on somebody's balcony, but it's just this wasteland of little white apartment buildings and things like that. It's ugly. And I don't know, if that's what development means, then, you know, I don't think that's what Wilmington really wants to become. Like there's track houses everywhere with and how do we prevent that? I mean, It can't be all about the profit and just making space for more people. At some point, you say the inn is full. We need to preserve quality of life for those people that have been here for decades and centuries.
Alina, that is the million-dollar question. Brian Chambers, planner with the City of Wilmington, as this UDO is updated, and we're talking about the update of the entire UDO, is that right, not just the tree portion of it?
That is correct.
Okay. So as you work through that process, how do you balance that? We get this question in a million different forms on just about every show that addresses an environmental issue versus economic growth. How do you think about that and put that in perspective as a member of city staff? Thanks so much for the call, Alina.
I think, first off, we want to improve the partnership we have with city staff, with the development community, with citizens as to what's happening and what we can do to make things better. Within the code itself, I think we need to provide more incentives for developers to preserve more trees on site, whether that's increasing density or increasing height. We'll also provide more flexibility with meeting other code requirements that will allow them the opportunity to save trees. A lot of this comes down to it's not just the trees that they got to worry about. They have stormwater requirements, they have parking requirements, they have setback requirements, building footprints. All those things working together, they have to worry about. It's not just the trees. So I think the more flexibility we can give them to achieve their goals, I think we'd achieve the city's goal of protecting more trees.
You're listening to Coastline. We're just about to go to break. We're talking today about the development boom in the Cape Fear region against the backdrop of tree preservation. I want to thank Scott Len, chair of the Southport Forestry Committee, for joining us today. Thank you so much. We need to add another chair to the studio. When we come back from this 90-second break, you'll have one more segment to call in and ask your question. We'll also get to some of those emails. We'll be joined in the next segment by the executive officer of the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. You can reach us by email on this Wednesday at coastline@whqr.org or by phone at 910-343-1138. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're exploring the current tree preservation protocols, the complexities, and how those are evolving in light of the development boom in the Cape Fear region. Our guests today, Bill Jane, member of the new nonprofit Alliance for Cape Fear Trees, Brian Chambers, planner for the City of Wilmington, and joining us now, Cameron Moore, executive officer of the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. Cameron Moore, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate you having us.
They're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can reach us by phone at 910-343-1138, or you can email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break, Alina called in and basically asked the million-dollar question, how do you balance economic growth and development with the preservation of the unique ecosystem that exists in southeastern North Carolina? And Brian Chambers with the City of Wilmington, you addressed some of those complexities that builders face, all the factors they have to consider. But I'd love to hear from you, Cameron Moore, how builders really have to think about this, because it appears very simple to a layperson.
Sure. And that's a great question. It does come down to a balance. That's really what everything comes down to, and it's the challenge every day. Every site is different. When we have a site that maybe is 5 acres or we have a site that's 500 acres, every subdivision has to fit in within those boundaries. And the rules and regulations that we'd have to abide by as a development community, you know, we have to fit everything in within those boundaries as well. This is stormwater, whether it be transportation networks within inside that subdivision, the stormwater ponds, also the pipes, collection systems that goes along with that, the water and sewer. And the interesting thing is that there's all sorts of setbacks within those themselves. In other words, you can't place them right on top of one another. So it's a myriad of different things that have to happen on site. Not only, you know, a lot of folks look at a piece of property and kind of see the, I guess, the two-dimensional world, so to speak, of what you see on the grounds. What you see is what you get, so to speak. But you also have to think under the ground as well. There's a lot of different types of infrastructure that has to be put under the ground, and the placement of those sometimes, unfortunately, dictate where trees can be saved or where trees have to come down to. Then, of course, we go through, as Brian has mentioned a couple times, the city's ordinances, whether we're in, you know, the city of Wilmington, or if we're in the county, or if we're in the town of Southport, the town of Leland. Many of the local jurisdictions in the Wilmington region have tree preservation ordinances or criteria.
How difficult are those to follow? Do they vary a lot from municipality to municipality?
Well, I mean, it's just a challenge of size. And the speaker that you had here before from the town of Southport, I think he hit the nail on the head. It's staffing. It's how much, you know, we can have we can take a tree preservation ordinance, the city, you know, the town of Southport, I'll use that for example because obviously they were here, and they can create a 30-page to a 300-page book of tree preservation ordinances. But we're not going to get anywhere with that. And not only as far as the regulated community and really also the general public, but also the town themselves, because they have to have somebody to be able to come in and actually enforce those ordinances.
Well, take us through. We've mentioned before this area on South 17th Street. There's a new commercial. It's commercial and residential development, I think, there. The movie theater is opening at the end soon, at the end of March, maybe early April. I can't remember. But this is what a lot of people who don't know anything about how this unfolds behind the scenes, they've said, we watched this whole area just get clear cut. How can you do that? How is that okay? So from a developer's point of view, is it just a cost issue? Why was that site completely clear cut?
It really goes back to the site. And so the first processes that a developer is going to go through is, first of all, figure out how can we fit everything to a certain degree within that site? And I'm not talking about, you know, most folks say, okay, well, how much can we get as far as density and housing? That's not what I'm talking about. How can we make the project successful and work within the general framework of what exists on site? We have to then come in, take a look at the stormwater management, and we have to take a look at the water and sewer. That starts to really dictate a lot. You know, that site that you're talking about, if you're coming down the road there, you'll see a very, very large stormwater pond. And in our area versus the Raleigh area, the Charlotte area, we actually have very stringent stormwater rules and requirements here, some of the most stringent rules in the entire state. And so just by abiding by that, we typically see those retention ponds get larger and larger, and so it eats up property.
And so is it safe to say that the stormwater runoff requirements actually are what you start with if they're stricter and it's harder to abide by those?
I come back to the term balance. So from an environmental constraints balance, we want to see as a development community, we want to take our part and do our part as far as being an environmental steward of that project. And what we have to strike constantly is a balance of being able to place building structures, whether it be residential, commercial, multifamily, on those sites, but at the same time be able to have it to where it's got safety in mind, it's got the zoning aspects of health, welfare, and safety, all those in mind. And so it's striking. It's all about a balance.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about tree preservation in an urban landscape. You can give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Jillian from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question concerns the huge, beautiful oak trees that were cut down by Monkey Junction when the Home Depot was built. And my response out of outrage to those beautiful trees being completely cut down was to boycott the store. And I was just curious if you felt that was something that was a meaningful action in response to something like that, or if that really doesn't make a difference.
That would be for you, Bill Jane, from an activist point of view.
Well, I would say that I'll kind of echo something that Cameron was talking about, balance. I think you need to – I would encourage you to get involved and get educated. Look at some of the – like the Wilmington Tree Commission website, the Alliance for Cape Fear Trees Facebook page. the North Carolina Urban Forest Council. Learn about some of these issues. Get involved if you really feel strongly. It's very, very time consuming. Scott talked about that for volunteers to get involved in these commissions. But sometimes you need to make sure that people that these problems get on somebody's radar screen. I always say to encourage people to contact your elected officials, your council members, your county commissioners, state. Contact those people. But it's a big balance. But I would say, first of all, get involved. Find out what kind of local volunteer organizations there are that you can support and get involved with.
Jillian, thank you so much for that call. So Bill's saying you would have more firepower if people work together on this and get educated at the same time.
Definitely, yeah. Just and contact your elected officials because one of the things that strikes me about this area is that the trees, the canopies, the natural beauty is an economic engine. It's not just something pretty. It's not just something that you think of as that you want to preserve because it's pretty. It's also an economic engine. I think this is one of the main reasons why companies come here, why retirees come here, and why there's a need to build projects, housing developments, and so on.
And we have an email from Sherry O'Daniel. She says the Cape Fear region's need for additional parking spots is increasing with the expansion of land under development. How can an increase in needed parking spots be met at the same time not increasing impervious surfaces in our area? It's essential with our area's stormwater issues and watershed impairment that impervious surfaces are at a minimum. Brian Chambers with the City of Wilmington.
I think that's simple. You go vertical. We need structured parking.
Go vertical. Parking garages, parking decks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the City of Wilmington is building into its plans?
I think it's something we want to incentivize and make it easier for developers to include in their projects. I think we are running out of development. I think at the beginning of your segment, you mentioned that the city is almost built out, and we are. We're running out of land, so anything that comes forward now is really, if we're going to increase density or intensity, we have to go up, not out.
And we had this question a couple of different ways. Brian, I think you may have already sort of addressed it, but what penalties are handed out for violations of the tree ordinances? Who is enforcing them? And have there been any citations handed out recently? And that's a question from Don and also a caller.
I do not handle enforcement or violations or civil citations. I only know that they indeed are handled through our zoning and enforcement staff.
Bill Jane, from the tree guy's point of view, do you feel like there are teeth in the enforcement of these ordinances?
Well, there are teeth, but I think they could be sharper. I think one of the ones you may have been talking about, Rachel, was a project at the Galleria.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Trees were cut down without a permit, and the city levied a fairly significant fine, but it's my understanding that that fine was not enforced. I don't know that for sure. Developers also pay mitigation. I think Brian alluded to that earlier for cutting down trees that are protected or significant, and there are different ways of mitigating, but you can pay in lieu of planting other trees. That fund, that money goes into a fund, and it's a worthwhile fund. The City of Wilmington uses it to plant new trees, but there's not a lot of transparency there. We don't know. Most people, even people that are involved, don't know how much is in the fund, and it's hard to plan from one year to the next. You don't know how much is going to be in that fund. How much money is the mitigation fund going to bring in next year? So you can't really plan with that. You can use it once you know, but That could be improved, I think.
And we have Alan from Wilmington. Alan from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, what's your question?
Hi, a lifetime listener and lifetime Wilmingtonian.
Can you turn down your radio? We're getting some feedback from that.
My radio is off right now.
Okay.
I wanted to know what impact the fire around 17th Street had on the tree preservation of that area for that recent development where they're putting up the movie theater and so on.
Right. So are you asking because there was a fire there, was it easier to just clear cut that? Is that where you're going?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Brian Chambers, that would be, I guess, a question for you and possibly you, Cameron Moore. There was a fire there, and I think it was ignited by a homeless encampment. This was a couple years ago.
I mean, certainly. There was a fire just on that site as well as across the road. And, you know, whether it came into the situation as far as developing the property, that is an unknown as far as I know. But, you know, yes, there was a fire on that property. You know, that property had a lot of what is known as, I guess, in the world, it's probably a horrible term, but kind of a scrub pine. There were little, you know, area pine trees known in that as far as that kind of sandy soil. But the development itself, I believe, was already in the planning stages well before that fire happened.
We have an email. This person writes, wondering if the planning office could give credit to developers for leaving forested portions of the site in an effort to treat and control stormwater. Many sites are clearing land in new developments to build stormwater retention ponds. It seems leaving these trees would provide not only stormwater treatment, but also habitat for animals and maintain the beauty of the site. Now, well, Cameron Moore, developers recognize that natural beauty adds value to the site itself.
By all means, and it helps sell our product. And I think it comes down to a little bit of the conversation was earlier is incentives. And the great thing about the city's code and the county's code of them getting updated is that it is much needed. And I think not only much needed for the regulated community, but I think also much needed for the city of Wilmington and the planning staff. As well as the county and the planning staff. So you have two entities that are moving through this process. The city's codes haven't been updated in 30-something years. The counties haven't been updated in 30-something years. Now, when I say that, I mean a major update. They've had text amendments performed to them, but what happens is that you end up with contradictory items sometimes with text amendments, where you have a section of the code that says one thing, and you have a section of the code that says another. And we as a regulated community kind of on site like, well, wait a minute, these aren't going to work together. But to your question, it comes down to incentives. And it also comes down to vertical structures and us being able to move more up instead of out on a piece of property.
And Cameron Moore with the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association, when we're talking about the city of Wilmington, that's one issue. Are there even tree ordinances, protections in the unincorporated parts of New Hanover County?
Yes, the county has ordinances as well in place.
Okay. And Bill Jane, is that something that Alliance for Cape Fear Trees is also focused on?
Right. Yeah, we've met with members of the planning staff for the county and had some input into their process of rewriting the Unified Development Code. And you know, I wanted to mention about incentives and controlling stormwater. There is a term that's used in development and planning called low-impact development, where, you know, the code can be written to incentivize keeping these groves of trees and kind of handling the stormwater runoff as much as possible with the natural infiltration.
So very quickly, Brian Chambers, is low-impact development part of this rewrite of the UDO?
Yes, it would definitely be part of the rewrite.
Okay, you're on the record. That's this edition of Coastline. Cameron Moore, Bill Jane, Brian Chambers, and Scott Len, thanks to all of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. for Coastline.